Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Elizabeth Velasco. Elizabeth is a member of Colorado's House of Representatives. She represents the state's 57th district, which includes all of the communities from Battlement Mesa to Aspen. Elizabeth and her family immigrated to Eagle County, Colorado from Mexico when she was 16. After high school, she earned a degree in culinary arts and worked in some of Vail and Aspen's best restaurants. She eventually left the restaurant business and started her own language interpretation business, Global Language Services, which provides interpretation for hospitals, clinics, courts, and government agencies. Elizabeth is a founding member of Voces Unidas, a Latino-led advocacy group, and during the COVID pandemic, Elizabeth worked for the group as a promotora, a community navigator, providing Latino residents with news and information about the pandemic. Welcome, Elizabeth. It's been a while since we talked. I think it was March of 2020, and you were working as a community organizer for Voces Unidas, and we were deep in COVID, and you were trying to help people in the Latino community understand what was happening, although none of us did, and trying to stay safe. A lot's happened since then. Can you just kind of catch us up on the last 5 years of your life? A lot's changed in the world, but I'm sure you have stories to tell.
Yeah, it's been really crazy. During COVID, I think a lot of inequalities that were longstanding were brought up to light, and I was very involved in the community. I was, volunteering at the rent assistance, community places, the food assistance, and also helping with vaccination clinics. And at that time, I was also running my interpreting and translation business, and me and my team were interpreting for people at the hospitals at a time when the doctors were full on spacesuits and there was no N95s, and we were not eligible for vaccines because we were not considered healthcare workers. We were contractors. So I fought for us to be eligible for the people that wanted to get the vaccine. We also saw that in Garfield County, Latinos were 70% of the COVID cases when we are only 30% of the population. And that is clear to me that we are the essential workers. We were the ones that were showing up in person, that we couldn't work from home. So, those inequalities were definitely brought up to light. I also was helping with interpretation and translation during the Grizzly Creek fire. And, that's a major fire that shut down I-70 for 2 weeks. And at the beginning, we didn't have information in Spanish, also in a community that is 30% Latino. And this information was road closures, evacuation orders, smoke alerts, stay in place alerts. Like, these are life or death situations, life and death information.
How did you get that job? You were busy enough with COVID. How did that come along?
The fire department reached out to me because, they had people who wanted to volunteer their time for language access, but they wanted to make sure that community members were getting the right information. As a professional in language access, we don't add or omit anything. We make sure that the message is the same from one language to the other. So in these vital life and death situations and community meetings, they wanted to make sure that the right information was shared, that was truthful, and that it was what they were sharing, as the professionals. So that's how I got involved. I got my red card, so I was also a wildland firefighter, started working as a public information officer with the Forest Service, and then deployed all over the nation supporting the response.
Where did you go?
I was in California, in Oregon, at a 500,000-acre fire. Here at home, I also supported at a fire in Eagle. Also supported with some prescribed fires.
What was that like? I mean, that was a life change overnight, right?
Yeah, it was definitely very, you know, I love to learn new things, and it felt like an area, you know, that was really, there was also many gaps in the emergency response world. You know, seeing the lack of diversity, seeing the lack of utilization of tools. You know, I remember our incident teams would ask, oh, should we do language access? Do we need language access in this community? And I would tell them, well, we have the census information, which tell us, you know, it's not always accurate, but it is an overview of who lives in the community, even who has access to a computer, who has a phone. Right. What's the age, you know, how best to communicate with community. So in emergency response, you know, the lessons that I've learned is that we must not leave anyone behind. You know, we have to collaborate together and utilize all the tools, and that there's, you know, we're still far from being able to have equitable emergency response, but it's so needed as we see increased temperatures, we see a change in climate, more and more catastrophic events. So, you know, from floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, hail, storms, fires. So we know that this will continue to get worse, and we need the resources for the professionals to respond, but also that collaboration. Do not leave anyone behind.
So what, you don't do that anymore. What changed? You switched gears again.
Yeah. So I decided to run for office. And what motivated me was I thought that people that are in charge right now don't care about the community. They are seeing how the Latino community is dying at, you know, more than double the number than other community members during COVID.
Yes.
We were the essential workers. We were the ones that didn't have access to information in moments of emergency. So there were so many gaps, and I knew that I could do better. It was not my dream, you know, to be a politician and to do this work. I come from grassroots organizing, from, you know, yelling at the sky when things are wrong. And
yeah, don't we all? But you stopped yelling at the sky. I'm still yelling at the sky.
Well, now people listen to me, but it's still so hard. You know, to change takes a lot of time. But we, you know, we must be at all the levels. We need the people that are demonstrating, that are marching, that are screaming at the sky, that are agitators. You know, we also need to be in these positions of power where we are creating laws that support working families, because it's not the same to have someone who is a wealthy millionaire, retired, you know, older person in power than it is to have a working class person or someone who has gone through the issues, you know, who has been poor, who has been homeless, who has gone through the immigration process, who has lived in mobile home parks, who has experienced the issues of the community and knows the urgency of the moment. And so I found that the mold of, you know, who these people are, elected officials, I definitely did not fit the mold. You know, I'm the first Mexican-born legislator in the state. I'm also the first Latina to represent the Western Slope, the first queer person to represent House District 57. And what I found is that, you know, people want someone that cares, that listens, that understands.
You broke the mold.
And made a new one. Try.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know how to run a campaign. I was doing and learning at the same time.
So how did you do that? I mean, you know, if you didn't know, of course you were a wildland firefighter, so you had some experience in moving with the problem. But describe how you organized.
I mean, I do think that as community organizers, we have the tools, you know, to run for office. We know what it is to be persuasive. We get our people together. We build coalitions, and that's definitely what I did.
You tell good stories too.
Yeah, we have to, we communicate on lived experience, you know, how the values that we have and how the issues are political. You know, they affect our daily lives. They affect our opportunities to thrive. And that is, you know, we want change that makes communities better and makes community members' lives better. I had a great advisor that was helping, but really it was my friends, you know, like we were the ones that started doing all the learning on how, you know, the deadlines, the how do you announce, what are the requirements, the campaign reporting. And after that, I started getting a lot of allies. You know, I wanted organizations that aligned with my values, and I aligned with their values to support me. And that was labor, that was environmental organizations, that was social justice organizations. And I don't think I quite understood how all the things are so intersectional. And that is one of the main things that I elevate now, you know, that immigrants and the LGBTQ community and women and children, you know, all the issues that affect us are labor issues, are environmental issues, are social justice issues.
Right.
I found a lot of support along the way, you know, how people were relating. I know that we have so many differences, you know, between, there's no people alike, but there is so much that is the same, you know, like working really hard to make ends meet, worrying about your family, worrying about safety, and, you know, doing all the things right and still not making it, you know, so.
Yeah.
I think that is universal. So that really, that's what spoke to people, you know, to support my campaign and support my leadership.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Colorado State Representative Elizabeth Velasco is describing her journey from resort chef to language translator to community organizer to wildlife firefighter and eventually to state representative. You had many lives, many, many jobs, many career, you know, you've come at it with a lot of experience. You were a chef, you were a language translator, wildlife firefighter. Talk about the people who have influenced you and what about your life experience that has brought you here? Because a lot of people wouldn't have taken this on. You carry some special spirits with you is into your work. Can you talk about that?
Thank you. You know, I remember growing up very low income, growing up poor in a small town in Mexico. And I grew up next to a plastic factory. So my environmental, you know, the environmental focus that I have comes because low-income people, low-income community members, we are exposed to more pollution. We're exposed, you know, we have less access to clean air and clean water. We might have to travel more. We might be, the access that we have is different. So I understood that from a very young age. But when we moved to the U.S., I lived in the mobile home park in Edwards. I lived in the mobile home park in Avon, lived in the mobile home park in Minturn. So we know that, you know, this is the last affordable housing that is not subsidized in the rural resort communities. And that's where workers live. And that's where a lot of the gaps are, you know, with outdated infrastructure, with sometimes not even drinking water accessible. You know, we had, that was one of the first things I did on my first year was start addressing the issues in water quality for mobile home parks, because, you know, these issues are not happening in wealthy communities or wealthy neighborhoods.
Right.
The testimony we heard was, you know, my water is red. My water stains my clothes and breaks my appliances. My water smells like sewage and gives my kids a rash. I'm not able to drink my water. I have to buy water. So those are environmental issues. Those are working people's issues up until today. You know, like no one had worked on those issues that are so, so important to our communities. So I do bring a lot of my lived experience to the work that I do. And I bring a lot of the, you know, not only lived experience, but organizing experience to work together with the most impacted. If you don't have the most vulnerable, you're not elevating everyone. You know, like that's not a good solution. If it only benefits the top 1%ers, you know,
right. They're
going to be fine. Whoever is in power, they have the resources to survive. But many of our community members and working families don't.
I grew up and was largely influenced by my grandmother, my aunt, my mother. I credit the women in my life for really shaping me and directing me. Who do you have in your life that has put you where you are?
Well, definitely my grandmother. You know, she's a force, the matriarch of the family.
Really? What's her name?
Her name is Francisca. And she's just very feisty, 90-year-old. Still yelling at everyone and fighting.
She's still in your life. That's wonderful.
Yeah, but you know, I grew up with her. She took care of me and my brother a lot when we were kids, because my mom was a nurse and my dad was in the U.S. you know, working. You know, I'm very close with her, but also my mom. You know, I think to have a conviction on your decisions, to be confident that there's better opportunities, that change is possible. All of those things, you know, someone who doesn't speak English and wanted to move to the U.S. because she knew that there was better opportunities for us and for her family. You know, like that is the American dream. That is what this country is founded on. So
yes.
It's definitely very... You know, I'm very proud to come from a family of strong women as well.
As well you should be. Things have changed since January of this last year. You know, now diversity is talked about by some as illegal, and inclusion is become something that we're not striving for anymore. You know, the Statue of Liberty with its "give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses." Life has really changed. How has it changed you and the work that you have to do and the work needs to be done to protect our Latino neighbors?
So it definitely It's been really hard. You know, I think that it's easy to go down the hole of despair. You know, I think that there's many things that are wrong. That world feels really heavy. You know, one thing that I've been doing, I definitely am taking care of my mental health. I started with therapy and other supports. And I'm very proud of that mental health journey. But also, I just came back from a fellowship where we talked about the timeline of the US and how we have been here. We have been in moments of that are hard, that have been targeting people who are different, you know, people who are not white.
Right.
And we have prevailed.
It's not the first time that we've done this to Latinos.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from the civil rights movement, where Chicanos were a big part of organizing with Reverend Dr. Luther King, you know, so that I do feel like these are the opportunities for great organizing when great harm is being done, and opportunity for working together, for standing up for what's right. And it's also not the first time that the government is the one who's oppressing people, and that
Right.
Government is used as a tool to attack communities. So sometimes it's frustrating, you know, to be in an elected position, because it's like right now we're defending the state of Colorado against the federal government. Like that's how it feels.
Well,
Like,
that's how it is. Yeah.
yeah, it is. It's definitely like that. So to elevate that people have constitutional rights, that people have the right to due process, that no one is above the law. You know, like I think that these are the basis of a republic, the basis of our constitution, and we will continue to stand up for those. But I also am so thankful and grateful for the people on the ground, you know, the nonprofits, the community organizers that are keeping communities safe, you know, the rapid response networks, because they are on the trenches. You know, like I think that we are all doing our different jobs,
Right.
but you know, community keeps community safe. I
Well,
did
and
think that.
with that in mind, what would your advice be to the Anglo community? Because right now, immigrants are targets, but in an autocratic government, the next step is those that disagree. We've already seen that people who disagree are targeted. So, what would your advice be to? I guess what I'm trying to say is, how could Anglos be of more support to Latinos who are really afraid right now?
I mean, my advice is, you know, take the trainings of how to be a an observer, how to report when there's abuse.
How can people become observers? Is there a number they can call or an organization that they need to contact?
Yeah, definitely look for your local nonprofits that are doing this work. For example, here in the Roaring Fork, we have Voces Unidas. But at the state level, we have CERC, who is also doing those trainings,
Can you tell me
community
what
members.
can you for the for those that are listening, what is CERC?
Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition. Yeah, so it's an organization that works to support migrants here in the state of Colorado, and they have been at the forefront of many of the big fights that we've had, from, you know, access to in-state tuition for undocumented students, access to driver's licenses for everyone. And we know that whenever one block of our community members are being targeted, that doesn't make anyone safer. That doesn't make our communities better. That's destabilizing, you know,
Exactly.
for the schools, for the businesses, for the community. And we are seeing major conflict, you know, in states like California, where people are like blocking ICE with their cars and with their bodies, you know. So I do think that this is a time to stand together. And because an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us, you know, this is dangerous for everyone when our communities are targeted.
Yes, and they say that 70% of the people who are now part of this roundup have not done anything illegal, except now they're defining immigrant coming to this country without papers as a felony, and that they can put you in prison, which is unconstitutional.
Yeah, so it is a scary world. You know, like, I think that it's a heavy, heavy time, and this is the time to stand on the right side of history, you know, to be able to tell our descendants, I was supporting my community members. I stood up for what's right. I stood up for human rights and constitutional rights and for protecting our democracy.
History will judge us not only for what we do, but what we didn't do when we could have. Thanks for being there. Thanks for sacrificing quite a bit in your life to help others.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely very hard. You know, it's a hard job. It's also a lot of learning every day, you know, different issues and different strategies. But it does feel very important to be there, you know, and also to even hear from other states, you know, the things that other states are doing and working for and fighting against. Like, you know, in Colorado, we do have those values of protecting our trans community, you know, standing up for the LGBTQ community, right, having access to abortion for people that need it, supporting our migrant community. You know, those are the values of Colorado. So for that, I am very proud.
That was State Representative Elizabeth Velasco, one of the hardest working public servants I've ever met. If you'd like to get involved helping your neighbors, please contact Voces Unidas at 970-340-8501 or the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition at 303-922-3344. Thanks for listening.